It's Monday, October 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a Doctors Without Borders hospital is hit by a U.S. airstrike in northern Afghanistan.
Targeting of any medical facility or personnel working in healthcare is unacceptable.
U.S. military authorities investigate amid conflicting claims of Taliban presence. Also ahead, a mass shooting reignites the gun control debate. Cambodia sees a future in vegetables. And new music from a female superstar performer. It's all on today's International Edition. Doctors Without Borders says the death toll from the U.S. airstrike on its hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, has risen to 22, even as the international medical charity disputed claims by Afghan officials that Taliban fighters were firing from the medical facility. The medical group said 12 hospital staff and 10 patients were killed in Saturday's attack, including 3 children. It condemned the aerial bombardment as a grave violation of international law. The Afghan Interior Ministry said 10 to 15 insurgents were hiding in the hospital. A Taliban spokesman, in a statement sent to VOA, has denied the presence of its fighters in the hospital at the time of the airstrike. Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, said the hospital was repeatedly hit very precisely, while surrounding buildings were left mostly untouched. International Edition host Sarah Williams spoke with Nicholas Metri, ICRC spokesman in Afghanistan, about the bombing of the hospital.
What is the reaction of your organization to the bombing of the MSF hospital in Kunduz?
We're definitely very shocked, very saddened by these tragic news. The MSF hospital was doing such great job at attending to the needs of the Afghan people in very difficult periods in Kunduz City in the past few days. And to hear that it was bombed and many of our MSF friends were killed, it's absolutely tragic and very, very shocking news for us.
Do you know or is it known about the circumstances at all of surrounding this bombing?
What we hear is absolutely the reports and allegations here and there, and we have no comment on that. To us, from our perspective, targeting of any medical facility or personnel working in healthcare is unacceptable regardless of the circumstances.
Kunduz has been the scene of a lot of fighting in the last few days. How was this hospital involved in assisting people in that region?
Since the fighting started, the two hospitals, there were just basically two operating hospitals in Kunduz City that are attending to the needs of those wounded because of the fighting. MSF Hospital was one of them. It was operating any time of the day at way beyond its normal capacity, and it was attending to those needs with much less human resources than usual, because many of its doctors and medical professionals were not able to reach the hospital during those days because of the security situation and some of the fighting. So it was providing a crucial service with much less resources than is necessary for such a situation.
I believe that two of your colleagues, employees of the ICRC, were at the hospital.
Yes.
But they were not hurt.
Thankfully not.
Well, looking forward, what do you think the U.S. government, the U.S. military and Afghan military can do to try to ensure that there is not a repetition of such an incident?
I wouldn't get too much into details of that. It's at the end of the day, all parties to any conflict in any given situation should just ensure at any point that any health facility that is clearly marked that is a health facility should be protected under any circumstances and provided the maximum protection and consideration, no matter what level the conflict has reached. So I wouldn't get into specific recommendations for the military or even government on future measures to avoid such things. These are things that definitely taught in military schools, and I don't even consider myself qualified enough to give advice on that. But from an international humanitarian law perspective, it is it's just one pillar of the law to protect civilians at all times and to make sure that health facilities and personnel working to aid people, to medically aid people in situations of war are protected at all times.
Will people from your organization be traveling to Kunduz to assist the situation there?
Unfortunately, right now, we don't see the situation as in any way predictable so that we can, again, send people. We're thankful enough that the people we had there are safe this time. and we managed to take them out of the city. So for now, we're just going to reassess the situation periodically on a daily basis until we're able. We have the most basic safety guarantees for our staff in order to be able to be there, assess the needs of the people, and be able to respond to them.
President Barack Obama on Saturday offered his deepest condolences to the medical professionals and other civilians killed and injured in the tragic incident. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter said a full investigation into the incident is underway. Well, it's time for us to check out what's trending online with our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. As always, she joins me here in the studio to discuss today's top story. Welcome, G.
Hi, Jim.
What's the Twitter handle for Doctors Without Borders?
The organization is on Twitter at MSF after its French acronym. And of course, that's the best handle to follow for the latest news coming out of Kunduz today. And Doctors Without Borders describes itself as an international, independent, medical humanitarian organization. So let's begin with a pinned tweet which reads like this. On bombing of MSF hospital in Kunduz, we cannot accept that this horrific loss of life will simply be dismissed as, quote, collateral damage, unquote. About 2,400 people shared the tweet from Saturday, and it's been marked as a favorite nearly 1,000 times. Mm.
And that's referring that the U.S. military statement that drew international outcry. What about some recent tweets from MSF?
Well, it revealed the latest death toll in a tweet, which is 22, as you mentioned earlier, and that includes 12 staff members and 10 patients. It also tweeted, not a single member of its staff reported any fighting inside the hospital compound prior to the U.S. airstrike Saturday morning.
Well, gee, the airstrike is getting a lot of criticism from around the globe. Can you give us some examples?
Sure. The Amnesty International, the ICRC, and various UN agencies are just a handful of international organizations that tweeted about the incident. And this is what Amnesty International tweeted. It's sickening to think that doctors and staff had to pay with their lives while trying to save others. Hashtag Kunduz, hashtag MSF, hashtag Afghanistan. In the official Twitter account of the UN Human Rights Office at UN Rights Wire tweeted this. Hashtag Kunduz hospital airstrikes. Utterly inexcusable. Full, transparent investigation needed now.
Pretty strong words. Mm-hmm. How popular is the hashtag Kunduz?
The hashtag was used in almost 27,000 tweets in the last 24 hours. And Jim, does that sound like a lot?
Yeah.
Well, just for comparison, hashtag Eagles, the U.S. sports team, was used in 76,000 tweets in the same time frame. Well, that's all for me today.
Wow. Thanks for that great analysis. G. Abby Lee in our studio. You can find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Authorities in the U.S. Pacific Coast state of Oregon are still working on a gunman's motive for killing nine people at a community college Thursday. Police say the medical examiner concluded 26-year-old Christopher Harper Mercer killed himself when confronted by police. The mass shooting prompted President Barack Obama to urge Americans to become single-issue voters on gun control by electing officials who are committed to passing such legislation in Congress. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me in the studio. Michael, the nation and lawmakers are yet again facing this issue.
Indeed, Jim. It seems that America suffers some sort of mass shooting a number of times a year, as President Barack Obama said, every few months. And each time it renews calls on Capitol Hill and from the White House to do something, for some sort of legislation to be put forward. It's usually bandied about. And in the case of the Newtown shootings at the elementary school in Connecticut at the end of 2012, which was a particularly heartbreaking episode, there actually was legislation that was put forward that, among other things, would have strengthened the requirements for background checks. In other words, to better scrutinize people who want to buy guns. But that was defeated. It was blocked in the Senate, and it did not go forward. President Obama, after this latest incident last week in Oregon, renewed the call and said that he's not going to let it go. But he himself acknowledged that this isn't something that he can do on his own, that lawmakers need to be pushed hard on this, and only the electorate can do so.
Have some of the lawmakers spoken out as well?
Some of them have. Nancy Pelosi, who's the House Democratic leader, wrote a letter to the outgoing Speaker John Boehner asking for, this is a very Washingtonian thing, asking for the formation of a special commission to study the issue and to come up with recommendations within a 60-day period. This has mostly gotten attention from the presidential candidates. Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton said that this is something that needs to be looked at and that there must be some concrete things that can be done to curb gun violence. Most of the Republican candidates who have spoken out say that, number one, it's not entirely clear that anything can be done legislatively to address this. And that, number two, the Constitution clearly states Americans have the right to bear arms and that that right should not be infringed.
One of the big lobbies for that is the NRA, the National Rifle Association, which has made its voice known to many members of Congress over the years.
It has, although it has yet to speak out publicly on this latest shooting. And I went to their website. There is no reference to it. There's no press release. They have yet to. Now, I assume that they will come out guns a-blazing, so to speak, to defend the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But so far, they seem to be, I don't know, keeping their powder dry.
Interesting. Perhaps testing the winds to see what the public sentiment is.
Possibly. I mean, if President Obama is serious about this and actually uses the bully pulpit aggressively, tenaciously, here's the thing, though, and this is something that everyone who looks at this issue acknowledges. Those who love guns, who are gun enthusiasts, have a passion level that far exceeds that of the ordinary American who simply looks at a tragedy and says, this is horrible, we should do something about it, and then the next day goes about their daily lives and forgets about it. There is a gap in terms of the passion level. And those who are gun enthusiasts and who give money to the National Rifle Association are the kind of people who will show up to vote and who will make their voices heard and who simply won't be silenced and won't let go of this issue.
It's an interesting balance in our society and political system between freedom and laws and controls.
Indeed, it is. I do have to say, I mean, the U.S. Constitution does specify the right of people to bear arms, although it's interesting, Jim, there is a clause in there, in the middle of it, saying as part of a well-regulated militia. And I suspect that if there is legislation that were to come forward and get passed, it would have to ultimately pass Supreme Court scrutiny. And there has been a long debate in this country as to whether the right to bear arms is an absolute. Mm-hmm. In other words, should I be able to go out and buy a bazooka if I want to? Or is it subject to some rational government control?
An interesting question that no doubt will be talked about quite a bit and debated quite a bit from now until, who knows, a long time.
Probably until you and I are in our graves,
Jim. That's right. Well, our armory here at VOA is not filled with weapons, but great correspondents like Michael Bowman. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, can vegetables save part of Cambodia's economy? Farmers there are being encouraged to grow vegetables instead of the main cash crop of rice to help satisfy the growing demand for locally produced organic farm products. Daniel Descartier has more from Phnom Penh.
Cambodians grew rice on about 3 million hectares of cultivated land in 2012. Vegetables accounted for just 54,000 hectares. Organic farmer Vuon Chem says that's mainly because of a lack of education.
If we plant bitter melon, we must have a lot of knowledge about how to grow bitter melon. If it's yard-long bean, we must know about the crop. Planting rice relies too much on rainfall, while vegetable farming is more flexible when it comes to water resources.
A host of obstacles, from a lack of irrigation to difficulties in accessing finance and establishing farmers' collectives, means it's cheaper to import vegetables from Vietnam or Thailand. But with rising incomes in urban areas and a booming tourism sector, there is pressure on the government to promote farming education.
We can send out 200 experts to assist farmers in vegetable farming, forming farmer communities, and linking farms to the market. If this can be achieved, it'll benefit the national economy.
He says that would help create jobs and keep inside Cambodia the hundreds of millions of dollars now spent on vegetable imports each year. Daniel Descartier for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Well, call her hashtag popular. She's one of the most popular entertainers today, both in terms of sales and social media presence. Following a public romance and breakup with Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez is out on her own with a new release from her latest album. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins me in the studio to tell more. Selena Gomez is somebody I even know. A singer, actress, fashion designer, and she's got a new song out.
That's right. And Selena Gomez has her second solo album, Revival, coming out October 9th. In many ways, you could say this is a debut set. I think she sort of regards it that way. This is going to be her first album on the Interscope label. All of Selena's other albums, both solo and with her old band, The Scene, were done on Hollywood Records, which is a Disney-owned company. And of course, Selena has been part of the Disney stable, or had been part of the Disney stable, since she was a young teenager. She did TV shows and movies, and so she was very much, you know, the clean-cut Disney girl. And then for the last couple of years, I guess she's occupied a place in the public imagination as Justin Bieber's on-and-off girlfriend. So she was in the tabloids. And she says she's sick of the noise. She's sick of other people defining who she is and what she's all about. And she's really looking to break out with Revival.
Well, a good way to do that, if you just want to get away from everything, is get in the studio by yourself in front of a microphone and belt out a good song.
That's exactly it. Here it is, the second single from Selena's upcoming album, Revival, out October 9th. This is called Same Old Love.
I'm so sick of that. Same old love. I'm so sick of that same old love. Feels like I'm
she's worked with some great people on this album. Her new single, Same Old Love, features co-writing from Charlie XCX, a British pop star who's gaining a reputation as a real song crafter for other acts, as well as a star in her own right. And even Max Martin had a hand in this album. And Max is a Swedish songwriter-producer who is, at this point, the most popular and successful pop songwriter on Earth, even though most people don't know who he is.
Right, I was just going to say, probably one of the most incredible talents you never knew about.
That's exactly right.
And I was reading that Selena Gomez was also looking up to Taylor Swift as a role model. There's another tie-in there. Taylor Swift, of course, very successful on her own and answers to no one but herself and her fans.
Well, yeah, Selena is part of Taylor Swift's girl posse, and those two may work together at some point in the future.
The possibilities are endless. Ray McDonald, as always, a pleasure to have you in the studio. Follow Ray on Twitter at Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter, our handle, at @VOA_IE. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On September 26th, in a high-level event on the margins of the 70th UN General Assembly, the international community left no doubt that it remains firmly committed to the shared goal of a united, peaceful, and prosperous Afghanistan. In a historic show of solidarity, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, and senior officials from more than 20 nations stood shoulder to shoulder with Afghan Chief Executive Dr. Abdullah Abdullah and Foreign Minister Salahuddin Rabbani to voice their continued support for Afghanistan's peaceful development and greater regional cooperation. While Afghanistan's government of national unity continues to face immense challenges, as witnessed by the heinous September 28th assault on Kunduz City by the Afghan Taliban, the Afghan people can draw a measure of comfort from the international consensus behind the government of national unity and the progress the government has made in advancing economic reform, combating corruption, strengthening the credibility of the country's electoral process, and opening the door to a peace process with the Taliban and other armed groups. Nations reserve their highest praise for the dedication and sacrifice of the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces and for those of the Afghan people. Secretary Kerry, Foreign Minister Yi, CEO Abdullah, and Foreign Minister Rabbani were unequivocal in their conviction that Afghanistan never again be used as a safe haven for international terrorists and that all armed Afghan opposition groups, including the Taliban, must stop destabilizing Afghanistan and join a reconciliation process, a conviction met with a chorus of support from the assembled nations who reaffirmed their continuing support to Afghanistan's security, stability, unity, peace, and prosperity. Sunday's historic meeting sent a clear message that the international community remains unwavering in its goal to support a united, peaceful, and prosperous Afghanistan. It will not be deterred. It will not be waited out. Secretary Kerry summed it best when he declared, "Make no mistake, the future of Afghanistan matters to every single one of us here."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.